gentlemen, welcome back to the Damage Report on Fridays, our favorite days. It's fun. The weekend's so close. The garbage is about to be taken out, and you're not gonna want to miss that, especially because it's not Brett. Brett's still gone. Brett'll be back in a few weeks or a month or like a year and ever. You know what we have for you? We have a special treat for you to help welcome you to the weekend. Deep Dive Zone, Jordan Yule. Jordan, how's it going?
John, it's going well. I'm sorry, I'm not Brett. That's a big, garbage suit to fill. But you know, I'm happy to be here.
I'm excited. Excited to have you here. Excited to have you throwing away some political garbage later on in our Garbage People of the Week segment. So all of that'll be fun. And you know what? I'm excited for some real chill vibes. So we brought a really chill guy for you. I think we could all use that. So why not? Thank you to everybody who's already here, whether you're in the members app, YouTube, Twitch, whatever. We appreciate you being here. Please hit the like button and share the stream if you haven't already, so that people know that we're live. You know, like in theory, hundreds of thousands of people would know that because of notifications, but that's not the way that YouTube works, unfortunately. So give us a little assist if you can. And as we go along, if you want to send us comments, tweets, super chats, anything like that, we'll respond as we go. And I wanted to let you know, as always, after the program, we're 90 minutes now, by the way, if you haven't been here in a bit. Indisputable with Dr. Rashad Ritchie is going to be coming up. It's going to be awesome. Yesterday, I was lucky enough to be Dr. Rashad Ritchie's co-host for the first time. We had a lot of fun. I don't know who's on the show today, but you can be guaranteed it's going to be good. Actually, I believe this might be accurate. Shelley Winter, conservative host, Brett. It's Brett. Oh, I see. So Brett can do Friday shows, I suppose. Okay. Well, anyway, no, that's awesome.
For a younger show.
Oh my God, a newer, fresh show. Okay, well, Brett Ehrlich and Dr. Rashad Ritchie, they said it couldn't be done. They implied, why would you? We're going to find out whether they were right. Anyway, so that should be a lot of fun. Oh, also, the Twitch pitch. Would you like to potentially stream for TYT on Twitch? Well, you are rapidly running out of time to send in your Twitch pitch. In fact, today is the last day. So tyt.com/twitch pitch if you'd like to be to get more information about that. Apparently the semifinals will be announced during the show on June 21st. So that's exciting. All of that's coming up. That said, Jordan, we got a lot of news to get to. Are you ready to talk about some stuff?
I'm never ready, but I'm going to pretend like I am.
Jordan, are you ready for Joe Manchin to look like a fool?
Oh, always.
Okay, good. I found something you're ready for. Well, in that case, I'm ready too. Let's do this. Joe Manchin has been saying we don't need to get rid of the filibuster because there's good Republicans and they will, you know, set aside their overriding strategy of trying to stop anything good from happening and trying to consign Joe Biden to the waste bin of history after just a few months. They'll set all that aside and they will join us to do things like pass some sort of voting rights bill, not the For the People Act, which he doesn't support in its current form, although we're going to talk about what he might support, but they'll come and do something. Well, Senator Mitch McConnell, now minority leader for the Republicans, decided, you know what, as convenient to us as this time wasting bipartisanship is, I would prefer to make Joe Manchin look like an idiot, so I'm going to throw him under the bus, and he did. He announced over the last day that the For the People Act and Manchin's proposed alternative are equally unacceptable and totally inappropriate, which is amazing because like there is a pretty good distance between the For the People Act and what Manchin would approve of. They're equally unacceptable. So he doesn't even care, Joe Manchin, about your ideas. And we're going to have more from him attacking Joe Manchin. But before we launch into our commentary, I want to let you know, in case you didn't see the show yesterday, some of what Manchin supports as a possible compromise bill, because if you're going to compromise on anything, it should be democracy. And what he doesn't support. So here's what he supports: a public election holiday. That's good. I've considered that common sense for literally years. 15 days of early voting, including 2 weekends of early voting. Computer models replacing partisan gerrymandering, potentially the biggest thing in that compromise now. Automatic registration, but through the DMV, not like truly automatic registration for everyone. You would have to be in the DMV system. So that would include most people, but not everyone. So bear that in mind. Some new campaign finance disclosures, but not everything that was initially in the For the People Act. Requires voter ID. That's great. and continued voter purges, which we know Republicans love. So you don't get a public campaign financing system. You don't get true automatic voter registration. You don't get universal vote by mail. You don't get a good bit of the ethics stuff and the campaign finance stuff and a whole bunch of other stuff. But Jordan, what do you think so far about what President Manchin will allow?
It's a perfect example. This whole scenario is a perfect example of why it's just meaningless to even try for bipartisanship right now. We are in a moment with a closing window of opportunity to do anything. Time is running out because after summer, they're going to be focused on midterms. And who knows what that's going to look like after those elections. So we're running out of time to do literally anything. And that this, which you point out, like this kind of sucks compared to the For the People Act. I mean, there's some good things, but I mean, voter ID laws, a system that where people rely on the DMV and all the issues related to that, to accessibility, to location, to distance people have to travel, to all these different hurdles they have to jump through, even get an ID. Mm-hmm. Just feeding into a voter ID system, which is already something that Republicans, you know, benefit from because it disproportionately impacts poor and black and brown voters. This is a system that would just continue the status quo with a few mealy mouth gifts to the left. And even that they don't want. Think back to when Obama was president, this famous Tortilla Coast meeting with Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan. I think Eric Cantor is there. And John Boehner, a few other key House and Senate Republicans. And they said, look, Obama's gonna be a one-term president. Nothing he wants is getting through. That's it. And they obstructed every step of the way for both terms. Why are we now to think that Republicans, even if there are a few good Republicans, you know, in the back benches, why are we going to think now that McConnell, who ultimately runs the Senate, is not going to is going to change on that past stance. There's no way they're going to give Biden a gift. This is a contentious midterm and an even tougher reelection campaign in 2024. They're not going to give him anything. They want him to run on the COVID response and that's it. So if that's enough, sure, that might help Democrats, but they're not going to give him anything, even what is ultimately a compromise.
Yeah, and they would have stopped him from running even on the COVID relief if they could have. They unfortunately failed because of reconciliation. You're totally right. Look, trying to work. We know that Manchin's lying, by the way. Like Jordan and I are not having a serious conversation about like, oh God, we have to convince him of the merits of nothing. Nothing. He's lying. But democracy needs to be defended. We all seem to agree on that outside the Republicans. From who? The Republicans. Why are we gonna involve them in the process? They're the ones that are destroying it. That's obviously insane. I might have a slightly different view of this on some parts. Obviously, the inclusion of the voter purges, requiring the voter ID, it is right wing garbage. Not to say that only right wingers have ever supported it, but it's generally right wing garbage that, as I pointed out earlier this week on the Damage Report, they couldn't get it under Republicans. Trump didn't pass national voter ID. So now under Democrats, we get national voter ID. That's insane and would make accepting this compromise quite distasteful. That said, there is good stuff in it. It's insane that it's up to one senator from West Virginia whether we get this stuff. Like, let's just stop and acknowledge that. It's madness. The nation, which is largely not in West Virginia, voted for Democrats in 2018 to take over the House, gave them the Senate and the presidency. Joe Manchin is such a small part of all of that. The idea that he would be responsible for all of it is annoying. But that said, getting rid of gerrymandering is not a small thing. A public election holiday would be great, especially for the working class that has a much harder time getting away to actually vote. The guaranteed 2 weeks of early voting would be fairly significant. And by the way, requiring 2 weekends of it means that it would fight back against some of this attempt by the Republicans to destroy the souls to the polls efforts. So largely trying to stop like black Christian voters from their voter drives. Some of the campaign finance stuff, blah, 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 is good. Now, it's just you got those poison pills, Jordan. But like getting rid of gerrymandering, that's fairly huge. We don't know the system they replace it with might have some issues too, by the way. But at least for now, that's something. Any other thoughts before we get to more of McConnell attacking Manchin?
Well, I mean, even Stacey Abrams. I think people are, I guess, to their credit, people are trying to engage us in good faith, like Stacey Abrams, I think, threw support behind it. And then Republicans said, well, now it's not even the Manchin proposal, it's the Abrams proposal, just like immediately trying to make it like,
you know, why don't, even more
toxic.
You're totally right. Why don't we show a little bit of Stacey Abrams, then I'll let you continue about that. Stacey Abrams has obviously been, you know, involved in activism around voting rights for a number of years. That's sort of her core thing. So what does she think about the Joe Manchin voting rights bill compromise?
That a compromise you could support?
Absolutely. What Senator Manchin is putting forward are some basic building blocks that we need to ensure that democracy is accessible no matter your geography. And those provisions that he is setting forth are strong ones that will create a level playing field, will create standards that do not vary from state to state, and I think will ensure that every American has improved access to the right to vote despite the onslaught of state legislation seeking to restrict access to the right to vote.
Okay, so Jordan, Stacey Abrams on board. What do you think about that? Does that make you more interested in the compromise? Does it make you less interested in Stacey Abrams? How do you feel about that?
I think people got really upset at her for even saying this, and I don't like, you know, I don't really care in the long run. Like, I think what she ultimately wants to do, and she's proven that in her work in the run up, especially to the key special elections. But like, this is, you know, I think she's saying like, sure, like literally anything will do it. Knowing full well, like the issues you pointed out with voter ID, with our registration system through the DMV, some of these more like restrictive measures, I think she's not fully on board with those. But she's saying like, look, this is a broken problem where like our democracy is basically hanging together by a thread. Can we fix this? I'll work with you. That's fine. Like, if she, you know, coming from the South, I'm sure she has to understand what it's like to work with Republicans as a Democrat. So. She's willing to do whatever, and I know full well that she wants more than that. Like, she's got a full voting rights drive and effort and campaign and organization. So I'm not reading too much into it. I think that's just something she has to say for posturing on TV. But even then, like I said, Republicans just still took it and was like, well, it's the Abrams proposal now and we hate
it. Exactly.
They're babies. They're babies.
Oh, Joe Manchin, you stupid idiot, that you're pretending to engage in good faith with this. I wasn't sure how she would come out actually, but I guess in hindsight, it sort of makes sense. These are some of the things that she's been fighting for. And again, it's a compromise. It has some things that absolutely blow, but it also has things that are amazing. It's both of those things. And I understand, by the way, some people, like a lot of people, I was gonna say they view people in politics this way, but they basically view everything in politics this way. Either something is divinely handed down from God, perfectly pure and awesome, or it deserves to have its face pushed into a belt sander. You're either the best ever, or the second you're not the best ever, you're the worst ever. So they view Stacey Abrams through that lens. Either she is the best pure progressive ever, or I will toss you into a volcano, you traitor. I think there's a middle ground, and Stacey Abrams is on the better part of that middle ground. Not the best progressive on literally everything. Some of the money stuff in the past hasn't been absolutely perfect. You know who she's better than though? A lot of them, including Joe Manchin. So, and also, by the way, I personally value activism and organization, and she's been doing that. She might have given the Dems the Senate, by the way, her and others in Georgia that have been doing work for literally years. So I consider what she says in this area to be worthy of at least taking note. Anyway, let's get to a little bit more of Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell appears to want to blow out of the water any remaining myth that there can be bipartisanship, I guess. So here's what he had to say about Joe Manchin's compromise voting bill. All Republicans will oppose that. Specifically there, he's referring to redistricting reforms and campaign finance disclosures. So let's just bear in mind what he's saying. You having any idea if billionaires are buying elections? No, you don't get to know that. McConnell is saying, I am going to keep it in the shadows. They can not only buy it and have it be legal, but you don't even get to know who has bought your democracy. Also, no, some idea that, and again, the process is important, but computer modeled congressional districts that are supposed to make some sense rather than been crafted by partisan hacks to produce the representation they want you to have. No, he wants that. He wants the hacks. He's pro hack. So he called the compromise, by the way, also it retains S1's rotten core, an assault on the fundamental idea that states, not the federal government, should decide how to run their own elections. Whereas the conversation is really about states deciding that you shouldn't really have substantive elections anymore if you live in certain ones. He says, in reality, the plan endorsed by Stacey Abrams is no compromise. It still subverts the First Amendment to supercharge cancel culture and the left's name and shame campaign model. And Jordan, I don't even know what that is. That just like he gets paid every time he mentions that. So he throws in everything like Joe Manchin's compromise is critical race theory. Is it just like, I don't, what does this have to do with supercharging cancel culture? If like people automatically are registered to vote?
Yeah, you're seeing that. You just mentioned it, critical race theory and cancel culture are like they're two big buzzwords. But it's also, this came out in a memo a couple months ago. This is the Republicans' like midterm strategy, is to get people like whipped up into a frenzy over cancel culture. So they're calling it everything. Even look at the guy who was doping his horse at the Kentucky Derby. He said it was a case of cancel culture, like everything. What is not cancel culture? So they're just like using it as a buzzword to get people fired up. And they like, they're preying on that like kind of instability that so many people feel, where if you know one slip up could end your career because people are so like nuts online. But like they're feeding into that. But to get back to the voting thing, this is you know, again, another instance of him not caring. And think back to Obama's most recent memoir about a few months ago. In it was a passage where he talked about him and Biden negotiating with Mitch McConnell, and they're laying out like, look, we're gonna do this, we'll do that. This is our compromise. Here's how we can work together to get this done. I might have even been infrastructure, but I can't remember specifically what the bill was. And McConnell's response was, you're under the impression that I care.
Yeah.
He's telling you who he is. Believe him, please. Don't even try. What, with this limited time we have, enact your agenda and then run on that in the midterms. Yeah. Plain and simple. Don't waste any more time.
Yeah. You want a sequel to that historical event that you just, we got one for you. So Joe Manchin's like, we're gonna work together, good Republicans. I'm gonna get a bunch of you because you exist, and we're gonna work together. And Joe Manchin or Mitch McConnell just like punches him in the face. He like Spartan kicks him into a hole, and as Joe Manchin is falling into this hole, he says, McConnell has a right to do whatever he thinks he can do. I would hope that there's enough good Republicans who understand the bedrock of our society is having accessible, fair, open election. He's still gonna try to work with them after all that. Dude, they just slit your throat. And you're like, wait, well, there's good Republicans.
Oh, it's spectacular to watch. It's if you don't laugh, you'll cry. But like this is,
I might do both
actually. Right, at the same time, it'd be great.
Yeah,
very cathartic. This is insanity. You're doing the same thing, just expecting different results. They told you who he is, but look, why would you think this when we're like, within a few months of Republicans just turning a blind eye to what occurred on January 6th, very few Republicans even cared about that or even said like, okay, yeah, this is something that we should like, you know, punish people who led the charge for or in investigate. Like, why now would they suddenly care about the integrity of elections? They just encouraged a rabid mob to storm the Capitol because they didn't like the outcome.
Well, Jordan, they have found one angle on January 6th that they're interested in, and we're gonna be talking about that a little bit later on the show, as well as right after this break that we're about to take. Isn't it fun when someone accidentally joins the left? Like they don't mean to, but they're accidentally left. Well, we've got that for you coming up after this. Okay, let's jump back into the news and talk about healthcare. Via TikTok, isn't that gonna be fun? Over on TikTok, there is a conservative TikToker named Conservative Rose who was posting about vaccines and why the fact that they're free shouldn't necessarily make you more confident. And from there, she accidentally became a socialist. Watch.
Let me ask you this. If giving out free COVID vaccine shots is the health of the nation, then why don't they give out free chemo? Why don't they give out free insulin? Food for thought, if the government really cared about people, they would make stuff like that for free. So it should make you think as to why they're pushing this free vaccine.
So I just want to say, you couldn't see, but I watched Jordan's like, it was basically that guy in the woods like smiling in real time.
She's so speaking to my heart.
You're making some good points, conservative Rose. I like it. Yeah. Why do we let people die of cancer and heart disease and diabetes and all sorts of chronic things that we could help? Why do we allow that? You raised some good points, Jordan. What do you think?
Yeah, checkmate, libs. It's exactly. But I think it also speaks. If you were to remove people from these partisan bubbles, from these kind of hyper partisan media outlets that like Fox is trying to distort people's perceptions, MSNBC to an extent is trying to distort people's perceptions. If you were to talk to people just straight about their class based issues, and ignore what McConnell is pushing or what Biden is pushing. People want a system where healthcare is simplified. No one likes their insurance company. No one says, oh yeah, I love trying to get my claim approved for several hours on the phone with my insurance representative. No, it sucks. It's a ton of paperwork. If you had a streamlined system that the wealthy paid for, you remove all titles, all branding, all partisanship on paper, vast majority of the country loves it. The people who don't like it are the rich. And those are the people who influence narratives and talking points to convince the working class that it's not in their best interest. So at its core, this is an example of that. Beyond partisan lines, this is something that's wildly popular if you were to just present it as is. So yeah. I love it. I love when these things happen because it does, it's slightly affirming because I do think a cross, cross class, cross race, a multicultural, intersectional populist message is a winning one.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. Great point and very well said. We're gonna have in just a second someone else who sort of echoes what you're saying there. But before we get to that, the second video, I wanna make clear of two things about this TikTok account. The first, I am fairly certain it's not a parody. There's a lot of conservative stuff going far back. Seems to really like Ted Cruz and guns and Donald Trump and all that. Secondly, what this is not is, hey, look at her, she's dumb. I wanna be very clear about that. I'm not interested in seeing that in the comments. I don't know what other content she does. Maybe she does awful stuff. But like Jordan said, she seems open to this. And if that's not enough to convince you, I wanna go to a video she posted after her first one went viral and lefties and libs were sending it around and all that. Here is how she responded to that.
On liberal TikTok, I'm okay with that. Because it showed me that people think that just because we are conservatives that we're not allowed to have or agree with some of the policies that liberals do have. That is not the case. I believe that some of the policies that liberals do, Democrats have, are good policies. They just need to be rewritten, redone, and it could possibly work. But they're just presented wrong. I don't understand some of this logic that just because we're conservative or liberal that we don't believe in some of the same things. So
I love that. I mean, I did not expect it. Normally, I would have expected, oh, screw you for mocking me. No, she's being fairly reasonable. She's like, no, yeah, no, I didn't really accidentally do this. I am actually open to some of this stuff. Now that doesn't mean that everything's totally awesome and pure. They need to be rewritten. In some cases, the right sort of fairly willingly allows themselves to be distracted by nonsense like, you know, what genitals Mr. Potato has and Dr. Seuss and stuff like that. And it takes like a bill like Medicare for All, which would provide the outcome that she's talking about there. Marco Rubio calls it socialism, and so they turn against it. Like there's a lot of other stuff here. It is nuanced, but she responded, I think, fairly reasonably to all of this being pointed out, Jordan.
She did. And this is an example of the type of person that we should think about reaching out to, because I think, like, you with the obvious caveats, like, she's a terrible person elsewhere, obviously. Let's hedge our bets a little bit, but
we should say, I don't know. I have no idea. I haven't watched 50 of her videos or anything like that.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm just hedging, just to be careful. I have no idea. But remove maybe not just her, any person who thinks like that, I would argue could be won over, because there are class-based issues that affect them that we have, that progressives and leftists have the winning message on, because it's inclusive and it directly responds to their material need. Now, she has this fear that Democrats and the left broadly would not address this issue sufficiently. That means she's open to a right-leaning populist. If someone like a Josh Hawley, and remember, Trump at one point promised universal healthcare, obviously he's full of it, but he did promise, and they liked the idea simply because he proposed it. It's not that they have this animus toward the idea of Medicare for all, it's that the Democrats are proposing it. So if someone like a Hawley or someone like a DeSantis or a right-wing populist or a demagogue or God forbid a Tucker Carlson introduces this, it's going to be popular on the right. Now, the end result of this being enacted, sure, could be good, but that sets up a right-wing populist movement that, as we've seen time and time again throughout history, it ends horribly. It puts women, people of color, disadvantaged and marginalized communities on the front lines. This is you do not want a nationalist and populist movement on the right. History could not be more clear. This ends poorly.
That is true, definitely. I think everybody gets that. You're totally right. Yeah, yeah. This is one of the ways you could appeal to people. Like, imagine if Bernie had been the candidate proposing stuff like this. Is it inconceivable that conservative Rose would have voted for Bernie Sanders potentially, or not voted for him, but come to support him if he institutes something like this? It's entirely possible. Yes, this is a way that a right wing populist could try to come to power, if right wing populists really exist, and mostly it's just more xenophobia. But theoretically it could happen. And by the way, conservative Rose is not alone. If you were to take a look at this, this is Pew. Among Republicans, do you believe that there should be a single national government program for healthcare? It's in the middle there. From 2019, when 30% said yes, by the way, of Republicans, it was already 30%. From 2019 to 2020, it went up 4 points. So more than a 10% gain effectively in the number of Republicans who support a single payer healthcare system in 1 year. It's not small, it's not niche. It's 1 out of 3 Republicans. That's pretty significant, bear that in mind. Now that said, let's move on to someone who I'm gonna have a little bit less sympathy and empathy for than conservative Rose as we move to this. Lauren Boebert. Lauren Boebert, speaking on the pandemic, believes that it is a tragedy. It's not necessarily the tragedy that you might think. She tweeted, "The real tragedy with COVID is that people were so afraid of dying that they stopped living." Which is a mangling of William Wallace, if I've ever seen it. But that's not the real tragedy of COVID. And I don't think this was a particularly difficult one to figure out. I think the 600,000 Americans who died is a bit more of a tragedy than that some people might still be wearing masks, or some people might not be chilling at a rave on the weekend yet. I don't know, Jordan, am I crazy? Or is what she said reprehensible?
No, I don't think you're crazy, John. I think she's just a disgusting person. Completely tone deaf. It's pandering to a broader fringe base on the right. And this is something that I think we should watch out for. And I would encourage members of the Dragon Squad and TYT's audience at large to, you know, do your research on the primary candidates on the left, because from what I understand from people who have been, you know, who work in DC and have been following that race closely, is she's extremely vulnerable because she's been voting against different trade and labor measures that impact her hometown, which is a union stronghold. It's a fairly left leaning area, and she really only got elected because of, like, you know, her gun stuff and being a business owner and people knowing her from that. But right now she's seen as a very vulnerable House candidate. So if people want to get involved, find the best progressive to you, donate, support their campaign, get her out of there. Like, this is a winnable race.
That's a great point. And when you find them, let us know. We'll bring them on. We would love to do what we can to take her out of Congress and send her back to running her restaurant that apparently gave people explosive diarrhea. So anyway, and she could definitely lose. Look, when they're sending Lauren Boebert, they're not sending their best. And by best, I don't mean a good person or anything. I don't have that high of a standard. She's not even as good at this as like a Marjorie Greene. She's like a fumbling, less natural Marjorie Greene. She's awful, don't get me wrong, but she's not as good at it. And look at that, like that tweet. Is that people were so afraid of dying that they stopped living. No, like actually people weren't afraid enough of dying, so they stopped living. That happened for some people, and along the way they got other people sick. That's really annoying. For some people, they just were convinced that it wasn't a big deal, but it was a big deal. And so I wanna just briefly give you a bit of an update. We did pass, by the way, 600,000 American dead. We got that, and it was distributed across America. Take a look at this map, breaking down at the county level how many people died. The big circles are 10,000, the smaller circles are 1,000, and you can see it all over. Like each of the little circles is 1,000 people, 1,000 families, 1,000 social groups that are never gonna be the same. That is what a little bit more than 1 year of COVID did to us. That is the real tragedy right there. And we're still experiencing it. We're still losing hundreds of people literally every single day. And we're worried about this Delta variant that's spreading, that's more transmissible. We're trying to vaccinate, but we're having trouble actually doing that because people have been poisoned against the vaccine. On the pre-show, I talked about J&J. It's done basically. People won't take it, apparently. They're having so much trouble getting people to take it because briefly they pulled it from circulation because they're worried about the blood clots. I worry at the time that it's never gonna recover. It never recovered. It's 4% of all the vaccinations is the easiest one. One shot and you're good. People don't wanna take it now because they were convinced not to. So that's the real tragedy. I don't have any hope that Lauren Boebert is gonna learn that, but I'm going to continue to try to get through to as many people as possible. Any other thoughts, Jordan?
Oh, it's sad. It's really sad on the vaccine part specifically, just how, and you see how effective the right is at convincing people that these types of things, which are well-meaning, are not in their best interest. So it's like, again, why it's important to support things like TYT and independent progressive media who are going to push back against that kind of stuff, because it just, that's an effective machine that the right uses as a political arm. It's really devastating stuff, and everything from this non-controversy of critical race theory to the drumming up cancel culture to how they've attacked trans kids just for wanting to play sports. Just vile, vile stuff. And now it's ultimately like, oh, don't get a vaccine, literally putting people in harm's way. It's disgusting.
Exactly. It is. Well, we are going to take our second break of this hour, but when we come back, Joe Biden, his administration, getting in some ethics trouble. I know that we're in the media, so we're supposed to have one standard for our enemies and the others for those who are supposed to be somewhat our allies. No, we're gonna be consistent actually and look at the evidence here. And then Bernie Sanders, he sees politicians across the spectrum for a variety of reasons thinking, you know what's a good enemy to have? China. And he's fighting back against that. So we're gonna give you his thoughts on the tension with China after this. That's a great list. I'm gonna have to put together that list. Movies you wish you could change an actor in so you could like it once again. Anyway, thank you everybody. Welcome back to what remains the first hour of TDR. I'm John Adirola. We got Jordan Ewell. Jordan, you know, if there is a person watching this that doesn't know what you do, what do you do? What show do you host?
I do. Lots of things, but on TYT, I host a show called Deep Dive, and we are on Tuesdays at 4 p.m. Eastern and on Thursdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. So come and join us. Last night we had Chelsea Manning on the show.
No big deal.
She's cool.
No big deal. Yeah.
We hung out, we talked about gaming. We got into some cool conversations around kind of social factors in her life and the lives of others that led her to joining the military. We got into, you know, attacks on whistleblowers, more gaming stuff, you know, the important topics with Chelsea. When you have Chelsea Manning for an hour, it was awesome.
Quick question.
The chat. Yeah.
What is Chelsea playing these days?
She does a lot of strategy games like Crusader Kings, you know, Command and Conquer type stuff. And she, you mentioned it earlier, but she's talked about her past, her favorite game of the past 10 years was Red Dead Redemption 2, and she specifically talked about the story and character development in that game that, that led her to like it so much.
Better than a movie, better than a novel. I think that story is, I'm playing it again after a couple of years. Yeah, I like Chelsea even more than I did before. Well, thank you, everyone. Check out Deep Dive. You can also check out Indisputable after our show. I also want to let you know tonight, very special event coming up after the main show. It is our third annual Juneteenth special. We're going to have Ben Dixon leading the first hour, Jared Jackson leading the second hour. And along the way, we're going to have people you know and love, you've seen on a bunch of different programs, maybe some you haven't. Bridget Todd, Kenya Evelyn, Dr. James Simmons, Dr. Rashad Ritchie, Jason Carter, Charles Coleman, Wozni Lombre, Wisdom Cole. They're going to be talking about reparations, diversity in politics, representation, voter outreach, a whole bunch more. That's coming up at 8 p.m. Eastern time, 5 p.m. Pacific time. So definitely check it out. And by the way, today at Shop TYT, you know, we were talking about that rainbow pride shirt. 100% of the profits are going to the NAACP. So if you want to go to shoptyt.com and you know buy some gear, maybe for Dragon Squad, for the Damage Report, for anything, the proceeds are going to be going to the NAACP. So that should be awesome. And with that, why don't we jump back into the news? Donald Trump and his administration were criticized quite a bit by us for using nepotism to staff the White House, you know, giving his daughter a job, his son-in-law, like they were all up in there. And that's largely what they consider government jobs to be for. It's not a place where you get the best people so you can get the best results. It's just a way to pay off your friends and buddies. But what about the Biden administration? Is there some nepotism there too? Well, apparently there is. According to new reporting in the Washington Post, in the first few months of Biden's presidency, at least five children of his top aides have secured coveted jobs in the new administration. They include two sons and a daughter of the White House counselor, the daughter of a deputy White House chief of staff, and the daughter of the director of presidential personnel. Former director of the Office of Government Ethics, Walter Schaub, says, while it may not be as bad as appointing your son or daughter to a top government post as Trump did with Jared and Ivanka, it's still bad. Not as bad as Trump, cannot be the new standard. So let's give you some examples of what this looks like, bearing in mind that initially Biden came out the gate swinging, like I'm gonna do some ethics stuff and it's all gonna be cool. On his first day in office, he signed an executive order implementing ethics rules that in key ways went further than the Obama administration's policies, but nothing actually stopped the hiring of people who are related to White House officials. So earlier this week, the Treasury Department announced the hiring of J.J. Ricchetti, a 2020 college graduate whose father is one of Biden's most trusted West Wing aides. Ricchetti is assuming a junior level position as special assistant in the Office of Legislative Affairs. Steve Ricchetti's daughter, Sharon Ricchetti, is deputy associate director of the Office of the White House Social Secretary, a job she secured after working at the Aspen Institute and on the Biden transition team. Bruce Reed, a deputy White House chief of staff and longtime Biden confidant, has a daughter, Julia Reed, who works as Biden's day scheduler. And some of the more experienced sons and daughters of White House officials hold higher level jobs. There's more, we can get into the specifics, but Jordan, what's your reaction so far?
I think Schaub's comment sums it up perfectly. Sure, it's not as bad as Biden, like, you know, appointing Hunter to be like a special envoy somewhere or like a diplomat or taking him on trips. Effectively, it's very weird, but effectively, like Ivanka was like the first lady because she was like so closely attached to him on some of these, at some of these important meetings and sitting next to him. If he had Hunter doing that, I think that would be kind of the one-to-one comparison. But this is still pretty bad. Because it clearly is not on merit when you have someone's three of somebody's kids in top posts in the White House. That's not by accident. That's not, you know, just a random blind application. And I also think about how they purged staff who at some point in their life,
yes,
smoked weed. And then that is like after saying like, look, we're gonna, you know, reform these policies, we're gonna catch up to like kind of where modern society is, we're not gonna punish you for doing this. And then as people were honest and forthcoming, as they, you know, got security clearance or got jobs, retroactively were then punished for it. So it's just like, yep, you know, it's still we have a long way to go before we clean up government, but it's a sign of, you know, just the same, yeah, status quo. Just it's a big club and we're not in it. So this is how they enrich themselves.
I'm glad that you reminded us of the weed thing. It also made me remember the guy in the press office that had been like harassing reporters, and they were so defensive that guy. They wanted to keep him. Like, if only he'd smoked weed, they could have yeeted him out of the White House, but he only harassed a female journalist. So anyway, yeah, you're right. And look, I agree that that statement is totally true. It isn't as bad for a couple different reasons. One is that the positions aren't necessarily as senior, and there does seem to be in some cases an actual consideration for qualifications. So the press secretary, Jen Psaki, she has a relative that has a job, but is also trained in that field, which is a little bit different than like Jared Kushner being in charge of the literal Middle East peace process, when I honestly don't know if he has training for literally anything. I don't know what he does when it comes to real estate. Trump doesn't seem to do anything. Why do we assume that Jared Kushner knows literally anything about floor joists? I don't know, but he was in charge of, that was just one of his things. He put a couple hours a week in the Middle East peace process. But that said, be better, build back better for government, build bureaucracy back better by not hiring your family members. It is a problem, as you point out with Rashetti, when your nepotism is only limited by the fact that you ran out of kids. That's not supposed to be the limit on your nepotism. So be better. And I know, like, some people will be like, well, why should you be discriminated against just because you have a family member that's in government? Because I don't, you just should, because it looks really bad and I want to set a better precedent. Not necessarily because I expect that the next Republican administration, that like President Carlson, is going to abide by it, but I do care about ethics and I want a government that does too. Any other thoughts, Jordan?
I mean, on Jared Kushner running the Middle East peace process, I haven't been keeping up with the news. Is everything good there?
No, it's totally cool.
It's good. He solved the Israel-Palestine conflict. Good. All right, great. That's what happened.
They made
trusted confidant.
They just opened an ice skating rink. It's half in the West Bank, half not, and people just mix, and it's great. It's great. He nailed it. Anyway, with that, okay, I think we have time for one last story in this first hour, and we got way more coming after that. This is going to be the end of the linear show after this story, but for those of you on YouTube and on Twitch, we got so much more. So stay tuned for that. But let's jump into this. Everybody seems to want a boogeyman, and China's the one for a lot of people for a lot of reasons, whether it's the pandemic, whether it's problems with our economy, whether you're a Democrat or whether you're a Republican. Demonizing China is a quick way to show that you care about America. But should it be? Should that be the way that we comport ourselves? Well, Senator Bernie Sanders doesn't think so, and he has a new op-ed out, sort of pushing for people to tone down the inflammatory rhetoric when it comes to China and try to find more productive diplomatic ways that we can resolve our differences and hopefully both be better as a result of it. So I want to give you just a few portions of this, but bear in mind, it is available at Foreign Affairs if you want to read it. Senator Sanders says, the unprecedented global challenges that the United States faces today, whether climate change, pandemics, nuclear proliferation, massive economic inequality, terrorism, corruption, authoritarianism, are shared global challenges. They cannot be solved by any one country acting alone. They require increased international cooperation, including with China, the most populous country on earth. It is distressing and dangerous, therefore, that a fast-growing consensus is emerging in Washington that views the US-Chinese relationship as a zero-sum economic and military struggle. The prevalence of this view will create a political environment in which the cooperation that the world desperately needs will be increasingly difficult to achieve. And so I'm going to give you more in a little bit, but basically, there seems to be, whether there's any, like, you can't even point to it, some sort of reason that we should result in something like Cold War 2.0, but with China, there's people who obviously want that situation, whether to fire up their base or because it allowed them to change certain trade policies to benefit a particular industry. So Jordan, I'm glad to at least have someone like sort of throwing up a hand and being like, hey, by the way, we don't need this Cold War. That's nice.
When I saw this on the rundown, I was so excited because this is something that I feel like is not talked about. It's not from a progressive perspective. Even during the State of the Union, Biden made a couple comments about China, saying we're entering into an era of competition. They are, you know, one of our chief rivals. Paraphrasing there, and has since, you know, since ratcheted up tensions as they were preparing to take over. You know, the State Department's kind of signaled, oh, we're pivoting to China as they exit Afghanistan and you know, the, you know, potentially finally leave Iraq. This is where they're headed next. It's China, it's Russia, and these are the two existential threats that we need to be worried about, not just on the ground. They're also making the same case that if China gets into space, we have to get into space. And that's their argument for continuing to fund the Space Force. and further enriching Space Command, which are separate, and Space Command kind of runs the war, but Space Force provide logistical support. So they want to continue pushing money into these enterprises and these new arms of the military industrial complex that, you know, a multifaceted, multi-pronged approach to China would, you know, achieve all of these same foreign policy and militaristic goals that we used to have in the Middle East. Now that's kind of soured. One thing we need to be worried about, and I cannot stress this enough, as we've seen the rise in anti-Asian American hate here, mm-hmm. as a result of how the Republicans smeared people, smeared Asian Americans during COVID because of its origin from Wuhan. Do not accept this framework that China is our rival or that we are in competition with China, because as we increasingly have a chilled foreign policy with China and further declining diplomatic relations, you will see an uptick again in anti-Asian American hate.
Yes.
Because people aren't going to distinguish between what type of Asian person they are or be able to have a nuance, oh, this is just about a strategic competition or geopolitical, whatever. They will see China is our enemy and these people here are our enemy. And you're going to see another increase in anti-Asian American hate. So do not accept this. The way to combat hate here is through diplomacy abroad. Because war and militaristic tensions with these types of countries dehumanizes our opponent to a subhuman level. And that makes it much, much easier to dismiss any mistreatment, any discrimination, any hate, violence, killing, whatever. Do not accept this framework. I am so happy. I wish we could have had Bernie as president, because this is the mm-hmm. foreign policy we need. We need a collectivist foreign policy to achieve these global goals, addressing climate change, addressing inequality. I appreciate his comments, and it's just my one message to the audience. Just please, please stress diplomacy. Don't accept this competitive framework.
I agree with literally everything you said. That was awesome. You're totally right. The violence against Asian Americans hasn't gone away. In fact, I just saw in like literally like a 3-minute walk. I don't know exactly where on the particular boulevard, but there was an attack in Culver City yesterday, actually. So it's still happening. You're totally right. And there's a lot of people who, you know, sometimes politicians, sometimes media. Tucker Carlson is happy to try to get his audience to love him a little bit more by whipping him up in a frenzy to hate China and by proxy Asian Americans. So yeah, no, we totally have to reject that. In some ways, by the way, pushing for a cold war like this is more, at least economically insidious than a hot war in Iraq, because it's easier to sustain. The thing about the endless wars in the Middle East is you can only continue them for a couple of decades before people get sick of it. But a cold war, you could go 50 years with that, because there's not necessarily dead soldiers. There's just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars wasted needlessly, purposefully on military hardware. So we need to be like as vigilant when it comes to setting up that sort of cold war with a country like China or a country like Russia, as we are with the hot wars, oppose both. And thankfully, Bernie is right on both of those issues. So that's awesome. Oh, and by the way, I want to jump to this last graphic of his, because he says Americans must not be naive about China's repression, disregard for human rights and global ambitions. I strongly believe that the American people have an interest in strengthening global norms that respect the rights and dignity of all people in the United States and China and around the world. We have to acknowledge all of those things of what's going on in China. But acknowledging those things is not calling for any sort of hot war or cold war with China. Acknowledging those and then producing an actual diplomatic situation, that's the only way you're gonna change. Tension with China isn't gonna result in them respecting human rights more. No, we need to actually have some sort of interchange, cultural, political, economic, all of that. That's the only way that you're gonna get some sort of benefit to a variety of groups inside of China. So I agree on Bernie Sanders, wish he'd been president. Event that is going to be the end of our first hour. So thank you to the linear audience. For those of you who are watching, whether on the app or on Twitch or on YouTube, we do have a lot more for you coming up, including our garbage people of the week, what happens with the McCloskeys. We've got so much. You're not going to want to miss it. We'll see you in just a few. Hey everybody over at YouTube and Twitch, welcome back to the show. We've got another about a half hour or so of fun stories to get to, and there will be the ceremonial filling of the trash can. That is coming up. But before we jump to that though, Did want to let you know, if you are living in the Ohio area, we've got an amazing event coming to your area very soon. Cenk Uygur, Nina Turner, and Killer Mike are going to be doing an economic justice town hall on June 26th. An actual live event with people in the same room, thankfully vaccinated. You can get more information at tyc.com/events for what's going to be an amazing, you're definitely going to want to be there. They're going to be talking about economic justice, basically how we get to, you know, a living wage, how we push for these sorts of policies, and what she might do if she wins her election. So isn't that amazing? You can find out tyc.com events, find out more there. Okay, with that, lots to get to, and we've got an overpacked rundown. The producers are probably already mad at me, so let's jump back into the news. You remember the McCloskeys? Well, if you're taking a look at that video, you probably do. Patricia McCloskey, her husband Mark McCloskey, have been engaged in a legal battle that has now resulted in them pleading guilty to misdemeanor crimes just yesterday. As a result of that, they are going to have to forfeit the weapons that they brandished completely irresponsibly there at a group of protesters who happened to be walking by their home. So that's out there. Now, if you don't remember exactly what happened, let's give you a little close-up shot of this interaction. Protesters saying something to her and her doing a weird cosplay of an old-timey criminal. I don't know what she's going for there. Anyway, so she menaced the crowd with her finger on the trigger. Great finger discipline there. They're very responsible gun owners. She pleaded guilty to misdemeanor harassment, was ordered to pay a fine of $2,000. They live in what looks like a mansion, or a museum possibly. So I think they're going to be able to do that. Her husband is going to have to give up his AR-15. He was fined $750, which wouldn't even buy you a replacement AR-15. So that's cool. So I don't know, Jordan, is this justice? Like they came so close to accidentally killing protesters, or intentionally killing protesters, and they're just gonna have to give up their guns. They can buy new ones, by the way. They're not barred from owning guns. They just can't use those guns.
I think this is everything they wanted, because this is, you know, we're living in an era where even something that we all see objectively as repugnant and horrifying is to certain elements of the right an act of heroism, an act of bravery and courage, and that's why he's running for Senate. And it's just like this is horrifying, that this is the trajectory we're on, where people do things like this, just utterly deranged things that even 10 years ago would just, you know, result in you being shunned from public life, is now what catapults you into a political career. So I'm deeply dismayed. Yeah. This is effectively a slap on the wrist, but these are also two, I think they're both of them are lawyers. So I can't imagine that they would have like found themselves in a situation where they actually were punished for anything or met with severe repercussions, because that's just how the justice system works. If you're rich or powerful or connected or educated, you're fine. It's the poor, it's the uneducated, it's the vulnerable, it's the weak, it's the sick. That's who really gets crushed under the weight of our system.
Totally true. They were fined, let's see, was $2,007, less than $3,000. They're going to raise far more than that off of this. They're going to use this to get money. That's how it works. You're right. This is how we pick our politicians, at least on the right. Did you do something awful? Are you a terrible person? Oh, good. I know who you are now. So I guess you're one of our leaders. And he's really trying to do that. I mean, he got to speak at the RNC. And we're going to show you what he's doing now with his new fame. But he tweeted in response to the pleading, saying, "A year ago, the mob came to my door to attack my family. I backed them down. The mob came for me. The media attacked me, and prosecutors tried to punish me for defending my family. They dropped all charges except for a claim I instilled imminent fear in the mob. I'd do it again." Which seems like, if you're the judge in that, and like you give him this slap on the wrist, and then he says, "I'd do it again," shouldn't you do something about that? It doesn't seem like it worked. But anyway, so he hasn't learned anything, or at least he insists that he hasn't learned anything. The mob didn't come for him. The mob did not march to his house. They weren't going to hurt him or his family or his property. He didn't back them down. They were walking by his property, and they menaced those protesters. That is the actual reality of what happened. But that sort of reality doesn't get you a political office. And he would very much like a political office, as you'll see in this video.
"My name is Mark McCloskey. A year ago, an angry mob crashed through my gate and threatened my life, my family, and my home. And I stood on the front porch with my AR-15 and I backed the mob down. where recently the prosecutor has dropped the charges against me, except for a claim that I purposely placed other people in imminent fear of physical harm. And by God, I did. And anytime they come to threaten me, I'll do the same thing again and again and again to protect myself, my home, my family, and our rights as human beings. A vote for McCloskey is a vote for standing your ground. Vote for me and we'll never back down.
Is there something wrong with me? How do these people look at that and think, that's strong, that's cool, that's alpha right there? I look at him and I think, you pathetic bastard, standing there with his gun like awkwardly held and his wife's got a pistol. Like, you're filming a campaign ad. What do you have your gun for? You guys were terrified that a protest was near your house. You're so scared all the time. Your constant state of terror is not strength. And I don't know why we need to teach Americans that pathetic people like this, rich bastards, talking about how constantly scared they are, in this case of black protesters, that that's somehow strong, that that's somehow admirable. I don't get so much about this country, Jordan. What do you think?
All I could see were ISIS videos. Like, when watching that, like, how is that any different than some sort of fringe fundamentalist, radical terror cell video or message emerging from the Middle East? Like, this is like, we see those and people clutch their pearls and it's like, oh, well, this reflects all Muslims, you know, it's used to further our jingoism, but like, it's a jarring image when you see that, but like, this is, we're replicating that here. When Boebert shows up for a committee hearing with guns behind her, or now this, like, this, he's just standing in front of a green screen holding a gun with a cross necklace. Like, this is a fundamentalist, dominionist, fascist movement that is emerging, and we have to squash it. There are going to be dozens more of McCloskeys in the next
few
years. Yeah.
Why wouldn't you? You either, like, and McCloskey's not the worst. Like, Rittenhouse, there, I'm worried about people like you do terrible things with guns and you are a hero. I'm really, really scared right now. Vote for me for Congress. That's effectively what we've set up. By the way, JYPZ Rocks on Twitch said Bunny and Claude. That's pretty funny. I hadn't heard that before. No, this is terrible. You're totally right. They would look at those, you know, like, terrorist videos of them like standing against rock walls with weapons and be like, that's terrible. But they're doing the same exact thing. He's wearing his, like, he's still wearing the polo and the Dockers or whatever, because I guess that's his uniform. That's his brand now. I don't know. I don't understand people. I don't know why that would be appealing to anyone other than this sort of implicit racism. I wish that we were better than that, but apparently we're not.
Yeah, but on that point, and to distinguish what we talked about, like a radical fringe cell out of the Middle East, Chip Crazy Hawaiian points out, like, the difference is why people are okay with it here and not that is because the McCloskeys are white. If it was Cori Bush and her husband, or you know, and Nina Turner and her husband doing something like this in a political ad, the right would be in absolute hysterics. So it is because he is white that he gets away with this kind of stuff.
Exactly. And I don't, so he's got his gun. He's strong because he wasn't in any danger, but he had his gun. So if I run for Congress and you see me suit up in full plate mail and I'm holding a double bladed axe and I'm like, I will stand for you. There was I saw a person. Am I strong? At least in that case, I have to get close to the person to defend myself. That is objectively cooler and stronger than the dude with the AR-15. I swear to God. If I had had a samurai sword, if I was one of those kids, those memes, like, that is cooler. But we don't treat it that way. No, you're supposed to get, like, if I was to do a campaign ad with me straddling a cannon, can I get elected? Can I be like, what, like a justice on the Supreme Court? I don't understand America. Anyway, we're running out of time. No, we're not gonna get to such good stories. Okay, well, we got to do what we got to do. So let's get ready for that. And to the director, let's have Jordan go first. I think that's only fair as we launch into this. Are we ready to do it? It's the end of the week, and so it's time to take out the trash. Oh, it was a trashy week indeed. Lots of political garbage out there. Jordan, we don't often have you on Garbage Day. Who is your political garbage person of the week?
My garbage person of the week is somebody who I think TYT folks should pay attention to. And I think we'll likely end up in the garbage again over the next year. This is somebody who has, you know, blocked progress specifically on making Juneteenth a holiday, who was recently kicked off of YouTube for spreading COVID misinformation at the onset of the pandemic. This person was basically like just created like a set number of people, which ended up in the millions, that he would be okay with dying if we reopened the country. And has just like really become one of the worst, most unhinged right wing hatchet men in the Senate, and really has not gotten the same type of like fury and outrage as other Republican senators has. So someone to watch out for is someone who does have a progressive challenger should he run again in 2022. So my garbage person of this week is Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin.
Is a great garbage person. Ron Johnson is such a, first of all, I don't remember hearing anything out of Ron Johnson before like 6 months ago. And then right, all of a sudden Ron Johnson's everywhere.
He's terrible. And yeah, he sucks.
How is he a senator? Like I've never heard him say, I'm not even gonna like expect a smart thing. I've never heard him say a rational thing, like one rational thing. He's a senator. And I know, like you're like, wait, John, you are implying you have standards. I get that we're past that or whatever. He's not just a congressperson, he is a literal senator. There's only 100 of them, and it's supposed to be the greatest deliberative body in the world. He's total garbage. And what's he garbage on? Well, that's gonna depend on the week. Sometimes it's COVID, sometimes elections, sometimes all sorts of stuff. But you're totally right. There's seemingly no redeeming quality to him. And a lot of it's, I'm assuming, a combination of they're stupid, sure, but they're dishonest and they're trolling. Like, did you see in the last day he said he's worried that after the Biden Putin meeting, he's worried that Biden is compromised by Putin? He's not worried about that. It's just a senator who believes that trolling is like the point. That's what senators are for.
Yeah, he's really picked up on like the Trump just saying anything to get headlines, and he's like, he's identified this like, like, I don't know what it is, just like a very clear one-to-one connection where if he says something stupid or outlandish, the media will run with it. And he's just using it to, you know, build up his profile. For what, if he ends up going to, you know, be an executive or a lobbyist or whatever after, if he doesn't run for re-election, sure. But like, he might be doing it just to like, you know, whip up his base in Wisconsin. And Wisconsin, you know, has now a resurgent progressive presence. Ben Wickler, my former colleague at MoveOn, now runs the Democratic Party there, and that guy is an amazing organizer. And now Mandela Barnes is likely going to run as the Democrat in the general in 2022. So that's going to be great, tough, because Mandela Barnes is a good progressive. You know, he's a fine progressive. He might not be like as left as, you know, Ilhan or Bernie that we might like, but like he's better than Ron Johnson, so I would argue. Mm-hmm. At a moment where we need every possible Senate seat we can get, that is a key one and a winnable one. So Ron Johnson is just losing his mind, I think, and it shows, yeah, in his comments.
Yeah, or pretending to lose his mind because he knows that that's what conservatives want. I don't know which it is. They're both bad. I don't like either. Total garbage. That is a great garbage person of the week. My garbage person of the week is actually quite a few people. It's a little bit, is it fair? Are you supposed to do that, John? Come on, that's not the thing. But no, they're all tied together. And it all has to do with the recent passing of Juneteenth into becoming a national holiday. So that has happened. That is good. It is good to know your history. It is a reward for those who've been fighting for literally decades to have recognition for this. It's obviously not the end of a whole bunch of problems with America and racism and all that. And so anyone, whether it's a politician or a rando or a corporation, who's like, oh good, we're done now. No, we're not. But that said, yeah, you should at least be able to do this. We should at least be able to say, good, that's a good thing. But not everyone can rise to even that low standard. So my garbage people are all the people along the way that are just so mad about the fact that it's become a holiday. And that starts with the 14 Republicans who voted against it in the House. Senate was unanimous, by the way. Even Ron Johnson, who blocked it a year ago, voted for it now. So you have 14 Republicans voting against it. And I just want to give credit to Parker Malloy, who used an app to combine all of their faces. And it does look like exactly the sort of person that would vote against Juneteenth. So thank you, Parker, for that. By the way, Trump supported it becoming a federal holiday. Trump would send out letters like celebrating it. Trump, the first year of his presidency, didn't acknowledge on the Holocaust Remembrance Day that Jewish individuals were killed. He still acknowledged Juneteenth, but these 14 Republicans were against it. But it's not just them, it's also people in media like Tucker Carlson, who had to get in a snippy thing about it. Take a look at this video.
Starting this Saturday, our country is getting a new Independence Day to supplant the old one, which people like Lori Lightfoot complained was racist. Not a single member of either party in the Senate opposed it. Republicans, in fact, co-sponsored the resolution. Happy that my bill to recognize Juneteenth as a national holiday just passed the Senate, wrote John Cornyn, a supposedly conservative senator from Texas. Lori Lightfoot is thrilled by this. Unlike John Cornyn, Lori Lightfoot understands the power of symbols. They're immensely important, that's why we have them. For Flag Day on Monday, a holiday designed to honor the American flag, speaking of symbols, Lori Lightfoot is flying something instead called the Pan-African flag. You're seeing a shot of it on your screen right now. It's now up in City Hall in Chicago. That and the Juneteenth flag.
Okay, we kept the context in there just in case you thought there was some issue, some reason he's opposing Juneteenth becoming a holiday that's not just an outgrowth of racism. No, it's just the racism. He's not doing that thing where it's like, well, you know, I'm worried there's too many holidays that Ron Johnson hid behind. No, he's just like, no, I hate all of this stuff. Yeah, so John Cornyn is now supposedly conservative because he supported Juneteenth becoming a holiday, which Donald Trump also did. That's all it takes to no longer be a conservative to Tucker Carlson. But it isn't just Tucker Carlson, it's others like Charlie Kirk, who had previously, under the Republicans, been in support of it becoming a holiday. Now that it's the Democrats, not so much. He says making Juneteenth the federal holiday isn't about emancipation of slaves. If it was, they would make September 22nd, Emancipation Proclamation Day, a federal holiday. This is about replacing July 4th, just like the 1619 Project is about replacing 1776. Conservatives must reject this. See, here's the thing about that assertion that it's replacing July 4th. It didn't. July 4th is still a holiday, you moron. He goes on to say, because he was tweeting a bunch about this, Lincoln knew America's founding was July 4th. He knew that the day our amazing nation made a step from ideal to reality. Juneteenth is an affront to the unity of July 4th. We now have two summer holidays, and one of them is based on race. Shame on the GOP for supporting this. We have two holidays in the summer. Summer is not the time for holidays. You can't have two, obviously. But as pathetic as all that is, and he went on, we also have Candace Owens, who had this to say. Juneteenth is so lame. Democrats really need to stop trying to repackage segregation. I'll be celebrating July 4th and July 4th only. I'm American. So she's only supporting only July 4th. No Veterans Day, no Labor Day, no anything. There's one holiday, damn it. Well, I'll be celebrating July 4th. You know why? Because I like hot dogs. But I'm also going to be celebrating Juneteenth. Jordan, that was a lot. I apologize. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think you could do both. I mean, Juneteenth has been a holiday in Texas for decades. It passed unanimously in the Senate. Now, thanks to, again, our other garbage person, Ron Johnson, finally relinquishing his block on that becoming a holiday. And some of the justifications were, oh, it costs so much to have a new federal holiday. It'll cost so much money. Where was that concern with the war on terror? Like, where's the concern with as we just continue to pump money into the Space Force? No, it's things like this that are nice nods and, you know, not sufficient totally in rectifying our past misdeeds, but it's in part it's okay. And it's obviously bipartisan, but the racial animus in this country cannot be overstated, and it's something that the media, the right-wing media, will pounce on because it divides the country, and they want that.
You're totally right. You're totally right. So that's my garbage person. But what about you? Well, 18,000 of you voted for the community garbage person of the week. And here are the top five. Coming in at number five this week is Lauren Boebert with 4% of the vote for competing with Marjorie Greene to be the most insane Republican. Hey, Ron Johnson is in there too. Number four at 6% of the vote is Greg Abbott for continuing to build Trump's failed border wall, now with donations. Number three of Kayleigh McEnany at 13% of the vote for claiming she never lied for Trump. Was that really this week? Jesus, a lot happens in a week. Number two at 21% of the vote is Laura Trump for telling border residents to get guns and be ready. And number one, our garbage person, community garbage person of the week with 57% of the vote is Mitch McConnell for pledging to block future Biden Supreme Court nominees. I'll throw in also he wants to block the voting rights legislation. That is your garbage person. Thank you to all of you who voted. Really do appreciate that. And thank you also to Jordan. Jordan, you're the best. Thank you for joining us on the Damage Report. It's always great to have you here.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, everyone. You can check out Deep Dive on Twitch. Everyone should be subscribed on Twitch. But coming up right after this, we're about to go to break. We've got Indisputable with Dr. Rashad Ritchie. Now, if you're already watching on YouTube, that's great. Although you should head to youtube.com/indisputabletyt. If you're on Twitch, you definitely should go to youtube.com/indisputabletyt, subscribe there, and you'll be able to watch the entire run of Indisputable. It's gonna be awesome. I will be leading the first hour of the Young Turks later on today, the power panel with Cenk Uygur and Wozni Lambre. It's gonna be amazing. You're not gonna wanna miss it. Until then, stay safe out there, stay sane out there, and I'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/tyt. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.